Welcome to the Hatch podcast for Hive. This is work from the Brave New Words project. A big thank you to Doncaster Creates for supporting us. This is a group piece based on Kim Moore's In That Year. And in that year, people connected with the intensity of a dial-up tone. And we watched our mighty fall from ivory towers. And in that year, we washed our hands so many times, but we could not rinse away our responsibilities. And in that year, emotions hid their faces behind dark veils, and neighbours became strangers, ghosts in ether. And in that year, the small march united through desolate streets, and even with 20/20 vision, we could not see. Nothing was clear. And in that year, everything continued. Babies were born, cords were cut into a world unrecognizable from what we had known. And in that year, fear and disbelief were unearthed and we found nothing blessed. Hermes fell, his mind long gone, wings dishevelled. And in that year, we became avatars and statuses and forgot what it means to be flesh and blood in proximity to flesh and blood. And in that year, this thing was birthed and the world cried out and stepped back with bated breath while it coveted death. And in that year, we swam. Even those of us who couldn't, and we made ourselves believe we could see land. We swam and swam and swam.
I'm Rachel Pearson, and this is Mission Report, Stardate 02-12-2020. The report needs updating. The humans are not what they have been. They hide behind glass and think it's stone. They worship the hexapod law. Their rulers are almost forgotten and replaced by green-skinned gods. They've managed to upload their conscience and live through avatars on screen. The humans are harsher than first observed, but contrarily kinder than ever. Their packs are now so diminished, they're hardly a pack at all. Their media screams danger about solar flares from the sun, mixing with computer errors, and now they must all stay indoors. But there is hope for the human. Its scientists no longer sleep, working to fix their species with primitive needles and dead cells.
I'm Samantha Davis, and this is Pledge. Pledge. Dear Mr. President, you've got big boots to fill. Big, clunky, ugly army boots. Chunky, dirty, tight and hard boots. Empty now, matching the promises that came with them. Dusty from being stood still while the world tumbled into chaos and despair. People hurting, fighting for their lives. Fighting for their breath, scared to be alive. But they're yours now. Take them, fill them, own them and mould them to your own souls. Make your own promises. Pull them up and stand proud, surrounded by the 75 million people who chose you, who need you, for a better year, to make the world great again, to give people hope again. Listen to those who fill their lungs and shout proud, their voices their own again. With Harris beside you and Trump behind you, make 2021 a year to be reckoned with. Make you and your team people to stand with. And stand with pride, American or not. Make 2021 a year not to be forgot.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Payne. This is Dear James Bond, which is about working at a cinema during the coronavirus pandemic. Dear James Bond. I'd have laughed if you had told me, even just a year ago, I'd be sat here today waiting for you. It'll be shit for a few weeks, but just hold on until Bond, those words a life raft as we sank down into the darkness. But we were left waiting, spotted you on September's horizon and industry's hopes clinging to your parachute, blown off course by an ill wind. Hopes were stranded, people drowned, yet still you say no time to die. I know it's not your fault, James. I understand. In some ways you're doing us a favour. I worked Endgame. The sheer mass of people decorating the floor with popcorn confetti, screeching, demanding, entitled, excited, with unwashed hands and uncovered faces. I'm glad you've kept them away. Granted as a reprieve from the looming threat of being overwhelmed by people who couldn't care less if we live or die. For this is no time to die. But of course, James, we look forward to when we can see you next year and finally embrace you, just as we can once again our loved ones. The light at the end of the tunnel silhouettes you striding into frame, fueled by the efforts of doctors and scientists, the toil and sacrifices of ordinary people wearing suits of scrubs and sweatpants, temperature guns loaded, licensed to swab. Together apart we stand, shaken, not scared, as this year's credits roll. Let 2021 be no time to die.
Dear children of 2021, we can't teach you anymore. Our answers have run dry. You watch us shouting at red and wobbly men on children's television. You ask why the mums at school are playing dress-up and what the red stains on Mrs. Fletcher's face could be. We take you to see Grandma. Waving from her enclosure behind the glass, she knocks her tea and her eyes look hungry. Your friends have the same questions, and you trade mysteries in the yard about where Nathan is today and why your neighbour has stopped throwing back your ball.
I'm Samantha Davis and this is Emily. Emily. She lay her life down, pestle and mortar, body smashed and ground. She did it for you, every woman of the world, for her, the little girl, dreaming of a job where no glass ceiling exists, room to grow without banging her head, leading and not being led. Women are changing. It's not all cooking and cleaning, scrubbing till they're gleaming with sweat and bleach, hands red and racked with dreams falling out from the sores. It's different now. Women with mouths and ideas, allowed to feel discontented and to have dreams. There are things to be done, our revolution has already begun. We can't stand still and not say what we think. We have to be educated, strong and succinct. It's our duty to empower each other. We will stand in the squares, placards at the ready, voices loud and fierce, unwavering and steady. Do it for the women who tried to make a stand. Do it for the girls who will grow into themselves, believing they're important and equal to man. Do it in memory of her who lay her life down, a carpet for the king.
Like a Girl, written by Rachel Thacker. Crossing the finishing line, the boys three strides behind. She cheated, they pant and cry, acting like victims of a serious crime. And I'm the defendant, stood falsely accused, because boys are socialised to think they can't lose. I won't apologise. Yes, I run like a girl. Just try to keep up next time.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Payne, and this is Shift Workers. We're a tough bunch to pin down, heading to work in the evening rush hour, passing housemates homebound in the commute. Sometimes it's like living with a ghost. Plates move, food gets eaten, bins fill and empty and fill again. You hear the shower run, the muffled drone of snoring. In a world made for the 9 to 5, you're a cog out of sync. You start the dance on your left foot, the rest of the world on their right, constantly trying to fall in step, treading on toes, arms flailing, never quite catching the beat. Schedules clash and shifts fall over the feet of socialising. Waiting for that weekly rota. Life stopping and starting, like watching YouTube on dial-up. But despite all this, you get to shop at midweek's quietest, to lounge in the cosy smugness of a Monday morning lie-in, gawp up at the stars, pinpricks of light watching over you in a sky as empty as the roads you drive. The hopeful pinks and oranges of a sunrise, its gift to you of a fresh new day.
So this poem is called Yellow. Yellow.
Was yellow my favourite colour before my mother told me? Yellow roses, a black opal martin, a white dress, 19 years old, the future stretching out in promise.
Potential by Rachel Thacker. Your long strides leave me 3 paces behind. Never wearying, you keep switching the finishing line. How can I keep up before you're out of sight? People say we look alike, but sometimes it's hard to believe. Every time I gaze at you, I can't see any of me. I wish we never met, now you won't leave me alone, pushing me to second best. Because you are everything I feel I ought to be.
Hello, I'm Rebecca and this is Moon Stories. They always talk about the day the moon disappeared. Not that any of them remember it. No one even remembers there was once this big glowing object in the sky. To some of us, it's more like a joke. How could anything like that have ever even existed? It doesn't seem to make sense. But each year we celebrate the Lunar Festival. We decorate our homes with glowing orbs and silver crescents. My favourite part is hearing the moon stories, about strange creatures who drew their strength from its light and seas that constantly shifted. I love the myths of the marshmallow men bouncing around on rock like it was a trampoline, and of the lost community of beach bums with sun-kissed skin and golden hair who used paddleboards to ride waves as tall as houses. Quite how anybody got any sleep with the night lit up like day, I have no idea. The one story nobody ever tells, though, is about where the moon actually went, or why it made its sudden exit from the sky. It was a hot topic of our last Lunar Festival party, crazy theories flying everywhere, until the doors slammed and the power went out. Except, the darkness was not complete. Somewhere outside, a light was shining. Not the yellow lights of the street lamps, but a cold, silvery glow. Just like that, we all remembered.
Sea of Love by Beth Pryor. As she returned to her body, the weight of displacement whipped against her. So she turned away. As the memory of him washed into the froth of the sea, the pit of her stomach caught up to her plodding feet, flipping in rhythm with the pounding in her head. Gone was the man who had watched her grow and fed her fat with knowledge and curiosity. Gone were the familiar moments of stillness and the dead air cushioning his terrible jokes. She turned for one last look, stretched an unsaid goodbye into an eternity, clinging to this moment before the rest of it, a life that would be forever a little less full, until it was her turn to float away, a memory turning on the tide of the sea.
I'm Samantha Davis, and this is Chaos Reigns. Chaos Reigns. If you were to look through my window between the gap of the ever-drawn beige curtains, I'd forgive you for thinking that something was wrong. Burglary and devastation or something like that. Empty takeaway containers from shoving cheap burgers down a dry throat. Screwed up notepaper filled with the ramblings of a mad mind. When will this end? What is wrong with me? Sat on a second-hand sofa, cigarette burn regrettably melted into fabric, lank, greasy hair falling over a haunted face. Why brush it aside when no one wants to see anyway? Life is scattered around this tiny space. Chaos reigns. Laundry basket overflowing, spilling out of the bathroom like a bath with too many bubbles. Clothes once worn are now discarded, replaced by pyjamas chosen as everyday wear. There's a smell of old food, intertwined with the scent of skin as the shower gets forgotten for yet another day. Dull tones of the television, which hasn't been turned off for weeks, bounce from wall to wall, preferring to listen to cheesy game shows than sit in silence with just negative thoughts as distraction, only interacting when a digital companion checks to see if life still exists. Are you still watching? Keeping myself prisoner within those blue tack stained walls, enduring the short reprieves of freedom I allow myself to buy much needed items like toilet roll or weed. I long to come back to this uninviting room called home, where I am free to bask in unhappiness without anyone to say otherwise. Get your shit together, this is unacceptable. If you were to look through my window, between the gap of the ever-drawn beige curtains, I'd forgive you for thinking that something was wrong.
Moon Landing by Rachel Thacker. If you shoot for the stars, you might still land on the moon. The thing is, we come from a world where a moon landing doesn't feel like it should. How can I appreciate how far I've come while the stars shine brighter in my face, a reminder where I could have gone? I thought gravity didn't exist up here, but the weight on me still feels heavy. I'm here and all I can do is rest. It's exhausting, achieving second best. Still not enough even when I gave my all. You told us to wish on shooting stars when you knew they'd already begun to fall.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Payne and this is Poultice. His chair pulled into the corner. Robin folded his arms tighter and huffed again. The reason for his sulking was twofold. First and foremost, he was upset he'd lost his soothing, moisturising lip poultice. Second, nobody had noticed he was upset. Time was ticking and he was due to go rescue some peasants from oppression pretty soon. Except, how could he? Surely nobody would expect him to go out without his lip poultice. Heroes didn't have chapped lips. He'd searched high and low under the sheaves of parchment detailing what he had to do, in the bag he kept his mineral water and hand cream. He'd even trekked all the way down to where he'd parked his horse's carriage in case it had rolled underneath one of the seats on his way into the forest that morning. But it was gone. He'd have to look into getting some more, but that would take days. His mood darkened further as Little John appeared, striding around all tall and broad with that great, big, stupid quarterstaff, clearly compensating for something. His hair always looked too good too. Robert would have to have words in about the proper appearance of a sidekick. But hang on. It wasn't just Little John's hair that was looking cared for today. His lips looked different. Shiny and wet, like a trout just fished out of the Trent. That explained why Robin couldn't find his lip poultice. It wasn't lost, it had been taken. His dry bottom lip quivered and rage surged through his slight frame as he launched himself at the man twice his size. You stole my lip poultice. It smeared all over your face. Little John stepped back rapidly, stumbling over his own feet in shock. You mean lip balm? I didn't know such a thing. I've just eaten a burger. It's just grease. Robin shook his head, preparing to launch into his tirade on the importance of knowing one's place in the Merry Men and not overstepping the mark, when a young woman ran up to him, an overloaded bag on her shoulder. She thrust a shiny metal tin at him. Sam, you left this in your dressing room. A runner just found it. Though the director's requested you don't use too much. He's aiming for at least some degree of authenticity. He snatched the tin off her, pouting. It's not Sam, it's Robin. He paused, drew breath, swept the hair from his eyes. Robin Hood.
Medusa's Day Off by Beth Pryor. As she did every day, Medusa sat on the toilet and gathered her hair into a tight bun. It always refused to go right first time, each strand fighting against her prying hands to slither free. The mornings were cold, so she had done her makeup in bed today. Flushing, she closed her eyes and looked up to the heavens. Her phone lit green and sang out beside her. Athena was her boss and liked to call even on her day off. A lean, long finger accepted the call and the phone shouted. A red-faced miniature of Athena was waving the report Medusa had submitted in the early hours. She hissed. This is unacceptable. What would Carson say if I handed him this? It's embarrassing, Medusa. I'm embarrassed. You should be too. Are you embarrassed? That's not a rhetorical question. Does it embarrass you? Medusa had balanced her phone against some books on her desk and was studying their obscured spines for clues. This wasn't going to stop until Athena felt she'd been punished enough. She took pleasure in torture. Never mind that most of the report was Athena's own work. I'm sorry, Athena. I was waiting for the others to send their chapters over and didn't get an answer from you about... Athena interrupted. Excuses. That's not good enough. Her face was pixelated and out of sync with the snarl in her voice. A blurred beast, speaking in tongues. It reminded her of all the meetings in which she'd wished to be frozen still and spared the virtual flagellation. Something inside Medusa flared. She looked directly into the camera, anger rising from her feet. It poured out beyond her head and funneled into the cavernous space between her and her victim. The screen was now scrambled with smudges of colour and insults distorted into screeches. The noise had stopped, but she could see Athena. Her mouth was open and her eyes had lost their fire. Her image was frozen. Rage held in stasis, her power lost, defeated. Medusa bent down to pick up the bubble, lying on the marble floor. She washed her hands and left the room.
I'm Rachel Pearson, and this is Door to 2021. I will bring into this new year the clanging of pans on a Thursday afternoon, the beats of a street disco and children singing, a million rainbows plastered on windows. I will bring into this new year the working from home lie-in, the shabby, comfy office wear, the company of my lunch hour. I will bring into this new year the fondness born from distance, my mum's home-cooked meals, the excitement of dogs. I will bring into this new year the isolation of my own company, the silence so easily found, the restful lack of humans. My door will be decorated with wildflowers, fastened with twine. Its glass will be made of watercolours and fabric strips. The handle will glitter with half-finished hobbies. I will step freely over the threshold of this year with the fetters lifted, and I will think of my solitude, shield it and covet it, fondly remember what it's like to be alone.